As we detailed in part one of our series, the four-year effort to overhaul the Pentagon's management structure didn't come with any help from the Pentagon itself. The Joint Chiefs fought the effort every step of the way, accusing congressional reformers of being unpatriotic and telling them their bill would do severe harm to the military. But once the reforms were passed by Congress and signed by the president, the bitter resistance seemed to melt away. Former Congressman Ike Skelton was a strong advocate for Goldwater Nichols on the House Armed Services Committee. I asked him how hard Congress had to push to make sure the reforms were implemented.
Not as much as you would think. The new set of Joint Chiefs came in, military saluted. They knew we meant business. And they really worked, I think every service really worked to implement it. I really have to give them credit.
One possible reason for that, by June of 1987, all of the military service chiefs who fought the reforms before the bill's passage and whose power was reduced by Goldwater Nichols were gone and replaced with new members.
And they didn't know what they lost. And we really made the Joint Chiefs head of a service that provided warriors to the combatant commanders wherever they may be.
Goldwater Nichols overhauled the Joint Chiefs not just by reducing the influence of the military services, but by making the chairman the principal military advisor to the president. That got rid of the consensus-based decision process that critics said yielded least common denominator military advice. It also strengthened the role of combatant commanders, then known as SINCs, and instilled a culture of jointness between the military services through personnel reforms. Follow-on legislation in 1987 also mandated the teaching of joint doctrine to military service members at war colleges. Jim Locker, the former Senate Armed Services Committee staffer whose defense reorganization report laid much of the foundation for Goldwater Nichols, went on to teach some of those courses. He says within a few years, the idea of jointness was already becoming second nature to young officers.
Goldwater Nichols did the broad strokes on moving to jointness. But there was lots of innovation inside the Department of Defense. When people kind of understood what was possible, they've developed ideas, joint task forces. You know, jointness has gone down to a much lower level than anybody could have anticipated in 1986. And so there are lots of bright minds in the Pentagon have worked hard to take full advantage of the legislation.
And just 5 years after the passage of the act, the reforms in military organization saw their first major real-world test. Operation Desert Storm gave the military its first wartime experience with a greatly strengthened combatant commander, General Norman Schwarzkopf, and a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff as principal military advisor, General Colin Powell.
And he had come to understand the importance of these particular changes. And for the nation, we were quite fortunate that such a skillful chairman came in at a pivotal moment in which implementation was going to be tremendously important. And General Powell implemented the ideas fully, and we started seeing the benefits of some of the provisions.
Those benefits were clear at the time to members of Congress and to some military officers who'd seen the military before Goldwater Nichols. General David Jones was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs who in 1982 started the firestorm that led to Goldwater Nichols by telling Congress the Joint Chiefs system was broken. 10 years later, he testified about the outcome of Desert Storm and said he was happy to be on the Hill to talk about a military success this time.
Clearly, our operation in Southwest Asia was a textbook operation. If I rate the before and after Goldwater Nichols on a 1 to 10 scale as to how we planned and operated and integrated, I would say before we were at about a 3. We're at about a 7 now.
Jones said without Goldwater Nichols, General Schwarzkopf might never have been the leader of Central Command. Before the reform, joint duty assignments weren't where the military services sent their best and brightest officers. Rather, those jobs were seen as career killers. Locker says Schwarzkopf and Desert Storm helped build the importance of those joint assignments.
They knew that career advancement would be enhanced by doing so, and they began to build a joint culture. So the implementation was smoother than you might have anticipated, in part because of key leaders on the military side of the Pentagon.
But 25 years after Goldwater Nichols, there are some reforms that didn't work as well as its drafters may have hoped. That's according to Rudy De Leon, who served as a Deputy Secretary of Defense in the Clinton administration. He also worked for the House Armed Services Committee during the passage and implementation of Goldwater Nichols.
The procurement reform pieces have the creation of the Undersecretary for Acquisition and Technology are still very much works in progress. But we've had some, you know, outstanding people move into that acquisition job. And so I think you need to look at Goldwater Nichols as, you know, on the operational side, it created a revolution. And then on procurement, I think that's still very much a work in progress.
At the time Goldwater Nichols was being passed, DOD procurement scandals were in the headlines far more than the topic of defense organization. That was the era when news was breaking about the Pentagon buying $600 toilet seats and $400 hammers, and Goldwater Nichols included some of the procurement reforms recommended by the Presidential Packard Commission.
They wanted to move procurement programs to someone who would manage them full-time, and so they created the Undersecretary for Acquisition. Prior to that, the services would manage the procurements, and OSD would really only get involved in the R&D phase.
But De Leon says DOD still hasn't managed to get its arms around the contracting process, the requirements process, and the budgeting process. Nonetheless, he thinks Goldwater Nichols could provide a guidepost to future national security reform.
Congress is searching on why the Goldwater Nichols was so successful, and you can see them struggling with those issues when they created the Director of National Intelligence and that office, and also the Homeland Security Department. What makes the Department of Defense so capable in terms of conducting its operational issues? So I think there are a lot of models in the Goldwater Nichols reform process that other agencies can learn.
Locker agrees. After working in the Senate and in the Pentagon, he went on to found the Project on National Security Reform. The group produced a report recommending a Goldwater Nichols type approach to the rest of the federal government, at least where national security is concerned.
It's very similar. At the time of Goldwater Nichols, we had great capability in the four services, but they were not able to work jointly. In today's world, we have lots of capability in the Defense Department, less in the civilian departments and agencies, which are scrapped for resources and have not prepared themselves well for the challenges of the 21st century. But they do need to be able to work together. They're not able to do that today. And that's going to require some major changes in our national security organization. It's going to require a transformation.
Locker says the national security system of 2011 is plagued by two problems, complexity and speed of change. He says the business world has tackled those problems by setting up horizontal organizational structures. Federal agencies, he says, are as vertically oriented as ever.
We have been dominated by the departments since 1947, and the integrating mechanisms, the National Security Council and its subgroups, are institutionally weak by comparison. Just like in the Defense Department, we have the Joint Staff, we have the Combatant Commands, we have Joint Task Forces, and we have even more subordinate organizations that can work jointly. In our government, we'll need the same kinds of changes.
Locker also says there are a lot of federal agencies that have national security missions but aren't treated that way. He says in too many people's minds, the national security community is still only made up of the military, diplomats, and the intelligence community.
But in today's world, national security is the economy. So there are all of those issues. It's energy, there are health dimensions, it's trade, and those need to be integrated into the national security system. So there are big changes ahead for our government.
Locker says he's not calling for a massive government reorganization. Agency structures can stay as they are, he says, but he thinks the government needs strong integrating forces to bring the full capabilities of agencies to solve tough challenges. And, as in Goldwater Nichols, employees need to be encouraged and rewarded for working jointly across organizational charts. Skelton agrees. Together with Congressman Jeff Davis, he tried to pass a Goldwater Nichols approach to civilian agencies and got nowhere. And unfortunately, he says, prospects for passage of a bold effort like Goldwater Nichols are a lot dimmer in 2011 than they were in 1986.
From what I see, it would be a double major challenge to get everybody in line. We had Democrats, Republicans on both sides of the Capitol. And I see the big thing in all of this is it changes the culture. It changes the way you do business every day. Goldwater Nichols did that, and I think that legislation that Jeff Davis and I introduced someday will will be passed.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.